This is Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, on your flagship station of the Jacksonville Jaguars. News Talk Radio WOKV. To join Brian Sexton, Jeff Lagerman, and Vic Ketchman, dial 355-NFL-1. That's 355-6351. Outside the Jacksonville calling area, dial 1-800-355-NFL-1. Jaguars This Week is brought to you in part by Prudential Network Realty, Ticket Exchange, and by the Jacksonville Transportation Group. Now, here's the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton.
I don't know, Vic. I don't think I could wear that shirt.
It's awful, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, if Loggy wore it out in the woods, it'd scare everything away. Turn your microphone on when you talk on this program, please.
Football, please.
Joe is wearing a Philadelphia Phillies shirt.
That's why they call him 70s Joe.
This is the ugliest Phillies shirt I've ever owned.
Year was manufactured sometime in the 80s.
No. They didn't even have this logo in the 80s.
Are you sure about that?
92 is when they started this logo.
Okay.
So I probably got this in the late 90s.
It's different.
Maybe 98.
It's different, but it's definitely an attention getter.
Why would you buy it? These are baseball stitches.
Why would you buy it? That is the question.
No, I know that.
Look like tire tracks to me.
not tonight.
Weather map going askew to me.
I mean, it couldn't be any uglier than if they had put Cookie Rojas's picture on it.
And there you go. And we're off to a great start this evening. Joe is obviously celebrating his Philadelphia heritage.
You like Cookie Rojas. I know.
With the start of the World Series tonight.
Did Cookie wear the glasses, or was that Bobby Wine?
They both wore glasses.
Oh, okay.
Cookie definitely, though, yeah.
Joe, who was the starting third baseman for the 1974 Philadelphia Phillies?
Mike Schmidt.
Just curious. Just trying to ask some esoteric question.
Number 20. The guy before him was Don Money.
Okay. See, you can get him.
Who was the All-Mid-American Conference shortstop in 1970?
Vic Ketchman.
Mike Schmidt.
You got it.
Yeah, he was a shortstop. You're right, Victor.
At Ohio University.
That's right.
All things Philly.
How about that?
Mm-hmm. You want to talk about the World Series tonight? Joe Fortunato will take your calls and questions. Other than that, the three of us are talking football. 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351 for Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, only on News Talk Radio WOKV. And obviously the conversation tonight begins with Bud Adams. The owner of the Titans taking a mess in Nashville and making it messier by insisting that Vince Young be the starting quarterback. How much of that is real, do you suppose? How much of that is subterfuge, and who do you think starts on Sunday?
I hear it's real. I hear that he's told Fisher that he wanted Young reinstated as the team starting quarterback for this game. I have even heard that Fisher advanced that information, got it out there so everyone knows, hey, not me.
Not my mistake.
I don't think it's what it does for this week that's of importance. I think this is the end of the line for Jeff Fisher in Tennessee, because if I was Jeff Fisher, which is to say a coach of great esteem, I couldn't live with this. I want out of here.
So you think it was dictated to him? I mean, the owner basically said as much in an interview, said that I want to see Vince Young.
Well, first of all, let's go back to last week. Bud Adams said some things that really ate at Jeff Fisher's job security.
Like?
Well, he made some comments, and the guy who was interviewing him said, are you saying that Jeff Fisher has to be reevaluated at the end of the year? And I'm paraphrasing. And Bud Adams said, yes, that's what I'm saying. In other words, suggesting that Jeff Fisher is not beyond evaluation. He's not beyond considering firing. And, okay, he did that once before, too, by the way, Bud Adams.
Was that 2002?
You got it.
They started 0-4?
They started 1-4. The Jaguars went there for a game.
They were 0-4, and the Jaguars were their first win.
I don't think so, but if you would check it out, I'll check it out. But either way, they were either 0-4 or 1-4, and the Jaguars went there after a big win over Philadelphia. Jaguars were kind of darling that year because they had gutted their roster because of the salary cap mess they were in, and they were winning games with Bobby Shaw, who returned a punt for a touchdown against Philadelphia,
yards,
and Donovan McNabb threw up on the field. It was really big stuff. Anyhow, So they go to Tennessee, and Peter King's covering the game, and to write a story about Tom Coughlin and how the Jaguars overcame their cap mess. And that week, Bud Adams said some very sharp things about a coach who was only a few years removed from the Super Bowl and who had given them nothing but success in Nashville. He kind of suggested then that, well, maybe we got to take a look at him at the end of the year. And then the Titans won that game and then won like 10 of the next 11 or something and got all the way to the AFC title game before they lost in Oakland. And, of course, there was never any mention again about Jeff Fisher needing reevaluation. But now this is the second time that the owner has done this to a coach of very, very high esteem. And he followed it up this week with this play Vince Young demand or order. And I got to tell you, if I'm Jeff Fisher, it would not bother me at all to have the freedom to look at other jobs when this season ends, for instance, in Carolina or maybe even in Dallas.
Yeah, but how many years does he have on his contract?
I think he needs to be re-upped. I think he needs some years added on.
Okay. Because, I mean, you know, the owner, he's probably thinking, hey, look, it worked a few years ago. Let me try it again. Yeah. You know, let me tweak the head
coach.
How
would you feel if you were Jeff Fisher?
I mean, heck, when you're 0-6, I don't think I'd expect my owner to feel any differently. I mean, really. I mean,
how about the young order, telling you who to play?
Well, I mean, was it an order or was it, you know,
I'm hearing it's
a
an
suggestion?
Order.
It was floated, by the way, about 3 weeks ago by Mike Reinfeldt, the general manager. He let it out there. He goes, look, the guy's got $14 million coming. We got to know.
Well, they gave $14 million to Kerry Collins over 2 years.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, so.
But this isn't new stuff because Reinfeldt floated it in the media a couple of weeks
my
ago.
My point, if I'm Jeff Fisher, and this is what I hear. He wanted Cutler, who was from Vanderbilt, right in Nashville. If I'm Jeff Fisher, my point is this. Look, you're the Texas nut who stuck this guy on me, who pushed this guy on me, and now I got to live with the consequences, and I don't want to live with the consequences because I wanted Cutler. Remember, it was Fisher who Shanahan called.
Yeah, right? But supposedly Fisher, because at the time he had Norm Chow as the offensive coordinator, they wanted Matt Leinart.
Yeah, that's. I've heard all kinds of things here, yeah. But I know Fisher did not want Vince Young.
You know how that works, okay? What's convenient for, you know, for the rumor to get out about what I wanted and what I did
want? I know that, you know. But I have heard that Fisher really, really liked Jay Cutler, and Shanahan went to him, and Fisher gave Shanahan a sterling recommendation on Cutler, which is why they drafted him. Anyhow, if I'm Fisher, I'm hot. I've given this franchise everything I could give it, going back to its dark days in Houston, to its dark days in Memphis, to its dark days for one season in Vanderbilt Stadium.
Right.
And I've taken it to pretty good heights for a small town. And I've never held it up. I've never said I'll go somewhere else or anything else. I've been true blue to the franchise. And now this is the second time in 7 years that he's, in my opinion, has been belittled by the owner. I wouldn't take it.
We need a break. When we come back, I want to ask you, Jeff, if Vince Young can help this team, or pardon me, that team in Nashville. We'll be back. More Jaguars this week right after this on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL1 or 1-800-355-NFL1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio, WOKV.
Because we know you don't care that Mark Sanchez munched on a hot dog in the fourth quarter of that Jets game out in Oakland last week, we'll move right along back to the Jaguars and Titans. And
yeah,
you know what, though?
I mean, they made a big deal out of Mark Sanchez eating a hot dog. It's not like he was flaunting the fact that he was eating a hot dog. And you know what? I was disappointed in his response to the media.
Where he said it wouldn't happen again?
Yeah.
I was hungry.
If people asked him, if I were asked why I had a hot dog, I was hungry.
Right.
Where did he get the hot dog?
Who cares?
I don't know. don't know, but he said in an interview that he was he didn't eat a pregame meal. He was hungry. He was feeling lightheaded in the late in the ballgame. They're up. They're winning big. Someone gave him a hot dog.
Hey, hey, look, when you play
hey,
the Raiders,
no
okay,
thing, dude?
Okay, you can eat a hot dog at some point in that game, yeah. Right?
It's, you can't take offense to that.
Yeah, my if an equipment guy went up in the stands and got a hot dog from a vendor because the trainer said, this guy's got to get something in the stomach. So what's the big deal?
Or what if he just ran around to the photographer's workroom on that concourse level and grabbed one?
If he was just hungry, who cares? Yeah. And then Sanchez has the response after the game. And then this week, I guess, which I think was a great thing and a great way to handle it, in that he didn't really need to do the apology after the game. He should have just did what he did this week, which I guess was by 500 hot dogs and buns, which is delivered to a like a chow line for homeless people. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
But don't apologize for that.
Well, if he'd eaten a league-sanctioned power bar or something like that, he would have been a problem, right?
That was
he
ridiculous.
Probably didn't want to eat that stuff. So he has a hot dog instead, and everyone jumps him.
I eat a hot dog, and now I got to buy 500 hot dogs for somebody else.
He can afford it. He can afford it.
This world is
I had two hot dogs yesterday, as a matter of fact, and I'm not apologizing for eating them.
Were they good?
I just
they
had
were
one.
Very good.
I just had one.
Did you?
I mean, it was a King Kong dog, too. Down here in the cafeteria, you got to see those things.
I didn't see them.
Oh,
I like, might have gotten one.
It's like a rope, man. I mean, it's like one of those ropes you used to climb.
All right, back to the Jaguars and the Titans. Sunday, it appears Vince Young will be the starting quarterback. Although Kerry Collins said, well, if he's the starter, I don't know anything about it. I haven't been informed of it yet, and maybe he was today. Don't know. But back to what we were talking about before the break, does Vince Young help the Titans?
No.
Here, let me tell you something. Kerry Collins had his best game of the year last year against the Jaguars. 112.2, I think, passer rating.
Three touchdowns in the second half.
Three touchdowns, all right? It was his best game of the year. Vince Young has played against the Jaguars five times. I think his highest passer rating is 70 point something. He's got a 30.2 in there. He's got a 46 point something.
50.5 overall.
50.5? And if you're thinking, yeah, but what about his scrambling ability? Say hello to 96 yards rushing in five games. The guy has done nothing. He's done absolutely nothing against the Jaguars, and the owner is ordering the coach to play the guy who's done nothing. The one guy had his best game of the year against the Jaguars. The other guy had a game that was a nightmare. It caused him to melt down. It caused him to drive around Nashville in the middle of the night crying.
Vince Young has had five passing attempts on the year in relief of Kerry Collins. One completion. Interception.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's got no
passing. I was going to say, yeah, where'd that come from?
Yeah.
So he's got that going for him, which
yeah.
is nice.
Yeah, he's 20% to the opponent.
Watch
anyway.
He'll throw for 400 yards on Sunday.
The guy was... He was celebrated as his rookie season came to a close. He led them to those six wins. Although, if you go back and look, Pac-Man Jones had a big year that year, intercepting passes and giving them short fields.
What is his? He's well, 29 starts. He's like 18-11. I mean, so the guy has a winning record. But, I mean, let's be honest. Is Vince Young the reason why he's 18-11 or the quality of the defense and the team the reason?
He stinks.
We know the answer to that.
If you saw him try to throw a football, even in his great rookie year. His rookie year was all about dropping back, looking like you're going to throw, and then running, all right? Which I don't think is much of an offense, you know, although you see it in college all the time. But anytime he threw the football, he looked like a guy whose hand was attached to his shoulder.
It's the way he throws the ball.
Yeah, it's just ugly, ugly, ugly. That was the third pick of the draft, ladies and gentlemen. A year before Jamarcus Russell was made the first pick of the draft.
That was Floyd Reese's pick, too,
Woo.
Wasn't it?
Did
Floyd Reese on
he
that?
He got hung with it, but it was the owner's pick.
Okay.
Floyd just said, yes, sir, and then they fired him.
Hmm.
But it was the owner's pick because he's a big Texas grad, you know, and Jeff, he saw it in his eyes. He had that look of, he's a winner,
champion.
Jeff. He's a winner. But... If the Big 12 conference hadn't paid off the official to
I'm not saying this, by the way. I am not saying
to
this.
Steal the game from Kansas. Steal the game from Kansas. Vince Young threw an interception in that game that should have cost
yep.
Texas to lose the game.
I'm saying that. Yep.
And if the official hadn't overruled that with a pass interference call that was a crime.
Why'd they do it, Vic?
For $8 million.
Yep, they
all right?
did it.
Texas isn't in the national title game. There is no fourth down play that that Lendell White doesn't get the first down on. And Texas isn't the national champion, and who knows if Vince Young's mystique was such that that anyone would have drafted him with a third pick of the draft.
I'm amazed at the fact that he's still there. I mean, he's the third overall pick in the draft, and he is in his fourth year. You just gave another guy, an aging veteran guy,
$7 million a year.
Yeah, 14 over two, you know, and he's the guy. Why keep him? I mean, clearly the coaching staff made a decision that he's not the guy.
If he can't play, and we can all see that, his teammates have to know that too. How are they going to react?
I don't want to say the guy can't play. He's not a great quarterback. He was a great college quarterback.
Right.
Make no mistake. The guy was a great college quarterback.
A running quarterback.
He's not a pro quarterback. He is the least of the Jaguars' concerns. Chris Johnson is the guy you got to worry about.
Absolutely.
Because I guarantee you that the Tennessee Titans are going to go back to what their foundation is all about. And that's running the football, controlling the clock. Chris Johnson is going to be, I should say, he better be rested prior to Sunday because they're going to give him the ball a bunch.
You know, for a team that wants to do that, they run the ball pretty well, 139 a game, but. You know, for a Jeff Fisher team, 25 minutes, 30 seconds time of possession.
Yeah, but you
minus
know,
10 in the takeaway giveaway ratio.
Also, you also got to kind of take into account that, I mean, they're a running football team that has been playing from behind. Teams that have a lead, how do you play a team, you know, play their offense?
Right.
You're soft. You've got a lead. So, I mean, some of the numbers that Chris Johnson and the Tennessee Titans have as an offense are a little overinflated.
So you're saying they're not as productive a running
team?
They're
good, but they're not as productive as that number will tell you that they are.
Okay. Well, when I look at the Jeff Fisher, and you just open their media guide, and what you see is they extol the virtues of Jeff Fisher's team, right? They don't turn the ball over. They control the clock.
They have done that. They haven't done that.
Right. They're minus 10. Last year they were plus 24. This year they're minus 10. And they are averaging 25.5 minutes time of possession. It just has
dead last in the league.
Not played to what Jeff Fisher wants to do, Logs.
No, I mean it's that they're totally out of their element, and the reason they're out of their element is because their defense stinks.
What year is Reinfeld in?
Three.
Go back and look it up and double check that. But he's right. He got here in 07. Yeah, this is his third season.
Okay, this is year three for him.
Your defense stinks. Why? Because the secondary, or because they don't have Albert Hainsworth?
Both. You know, both, and they got Pro Bowl players that are playing like junk.
Griffin?
Well, I mean, go across the board. I mean, Griffin, Chris Hope, Cortland Finnegan's been out. Nick Harper has been out. They've played two rookies at corner. Kyle Vandenbosch has not returned to the form that he had back in 07 when he was an absolute terror. Now, is that because he had the groin last year and that's slowing him down, or is that Albert Hainsworth being gone? Probably both. You know, so the defense is the reason why the Tennessee Titans are where they are. That's where it starts, and that's obviously their biggest weakness right now. But they're going to get some guys back this week, so we'll see.
So the obvious, the logical thing to do, of course, then is bench the quarterback. I mean, if the defense is to blame, you got to bench the quarterback.
Absolutely. It works. Makes sense.
Good job, bud.
We're due for news here at the bottom of the hour. By the way, in his news conference today, Jeff Fisher said that he would have an answer for the media in Tennessee about the quarterback situation tomorrow, Thursday.
Okay.
So we'll know something then. Take a break. News is next on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL1 or 1-800-355-NFL1. Now back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio, WOKV.
Welcome back, Jaguars This Week, second half hour of hour number one. Sexton Loggeman Ketchman and Philly Joe Fortunato is here. If you've got a baseball question, we'll throw him on the air. We'll just leave it at that, right? I wish we had a webcam in here right now just for the virtue of showing
I wish, you know, being that the Phillies are in the World Series, you would think that that our Philly friend would have some of his friends from Philly ship us down some cheesesteaks.
Yeah, how come no food tonight?
You know, I mean, it's right? I mean, cheesesteaks would be a kind of appropriate
a great
for
way
tonight.
To start off
they don't ship well.
Why not?
They get soggy.
They get real nasty.
Well, no, you're saying the bread and the meat and all that separate, and then, you know, you get there, you put it together kind of a thing. I'm all for that.
Thanks, John.
I'll make them.
You make good Philly cheesesteaks?
Sure.
Really?
Absolutely.
I'm all for it, man. When you cooking?
All right.
I'll bring the what do I got to bring? Beer?
We're going to do this Wednesday? We can't do it for the
pre-game. We can bring a hot plate into the studio.
How about one into the stadium at LP Field?
That'd be nice.
I like LP Field a lot.
I do too.
By the way, I'll be glad when the World Series is over because Joe will stop wearing ridiculously out-of-date shirts and then posting obscene things on the wall up here.
See, that's
Did you see that? Did you see the sign that he put up there that said, Yank These? It's not Yankees, it's Yank These.
It's just
folks, you can figure out what it means.
It's just a nice picture of the fanatic.
The Philly fanatic doing his best Roseanne Barr impersonation. And with that, it's time to go to...
That was the first great mascot, you know, of the new genre, you know, of mascots like Jacksonville. No, Philly Fanatic was
the
first.
What about the chicken?
Chicken was
You're right, you're right,
first.
You're right, chicken, but...
But the chicken was...
Philly Fanatic, I think... It was the one that sort of kicked off this avalanche of, you know, of all these Jackson DeVille types.
Oversized furry balls.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to comment on that?
I'm gonna save that line, too. That'll be in a promo.
Oh, goodness gracious. I knew we shouldn't have gone there. 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. The Jaguars did not have. What are you looking at me like that for?
Did not have what?
They did not have their starting tackles the last time they played.
Yeah, the Trey Titans. Thomas was the left tackle, and Mo Williams played right tackle, and they did very well. Then the following week, they did very not well in Seattle.
Yeah. And all they did was insert Evan Britton back into the lineup.
Yeah. Britton and Monroe will be the starting tackles in Tennessee. You know, this has been a defensive team under Jack Del Rio that's always struggled on offense, and now it's an offensive team that's struggling on defense. It's not in transition. It's made the transition. I think their offense has a chance to be really, really good before the year is up. I think they have the ability, if they stay healthy, because they don't have depth, as these tackles emerge, develop, as these wide receivers do the same, look out. On defense, I don't see any hope.
This is a big week in the National Football League. Do you look at some of the games that's
great
coming
games.
Up?
I great mean, games.
This may be the best weekend yet in the National Football League.
Denver at Baltimore.
That's right.
Obviously, Minnesota, Green Bay.
Let me read them to you, okay? Because to me, this is a premier weekend in the National Football mm-hmm. League. Denver at Baltimore, and then Houston at Buffalo, Cleveland at Chicago, Seattle at Dallas has got some intrigue there. And this is a big game. St. Louis at Detroit. That's a good matchup.
What are you saying about a good week?
No, seriously, though.
What is good
Hey, look, if I can have four good games, five good matchups in an NFL weekend, that's a good weekend.
Well, I know the one.
Here they come. Mm-hmm. Okay. Giants at Philly.
Outstanding.
Great matchup.
Outstanding, yep.
Miami at the Jets.
Good one.
Okay, that's a great matchup. Jacksonville at Tennessee. Okay, that's a good matchup. It's
good
a division rivalry.
Yeah,
that's good
right.
for us. Minnesota at Green Bay.
That's your headliner.
That's the game of the week.
Yep.
But then as far as the game of the week on the field, not the storylines leading up to it, it's the Monday night game,
yep.
And that's Atlanta at New Orleans.
It's a good one.
I mean, this is a great, great week for division rivalry matchups. Doesn't get any better than this. Looking forward to a good weekend in the NFL.
And in my opinion, if you're a Jaguars fan and you really want to, you know, start the playoff watch, you're rooting for Denver to beat the Ravens.
Are you doing that already?
I think it's fun. I don't see why, as we're right here on the verge of
coming out
Halloween.
Of the bye week also.
Yeah, I don't see anything wrong with it. In my opinion, you want the Ravens to lose a lot, and you want, there was another one in there. You can take care of the Jets, and you can take care of the Texans, but you need the Ravens to lose a lot, and you can who was there was one of Chargers.
Houston
you need to,
at
you,
Buffalo.
You need the Chargers to lose a lot. Those are the teams you need to lose.
And the Chargers are playing Oakland.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen.
So, I mean, this week you would root for the Broncos and the Raiders.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, you want the Jets, the Bills.
You can take care of the Jets. You can take care of the Texans because you have games, and the Dolphins, they're not going to be in it anyhow. They got a killer schedule, and they're not good.
All right, Vic, let me ask you a question here. What you know, you've got birdies.
Yeah.
Rasheen Mathis going to play this week?
I got the sense that he's going to play. He said he told us today that the cast comes off on Friday. He'll practice, according to Coach Del Rio, he'll practice on Friday. Well, I can't imagine a guy is going to take a cast off in practice and then say, no, put it back on, I'm out.
After a finger light, you would have to play with a cast.
They'll put something, right? Some kind of protective.
Maybe you got to protect it.
He's got a solid cast on there right from the tip of his finger up to his elbow, and it's to immobilize everything, to give him a full week of immobilization. Then they're going to take it off, and he's going to put on some kind of a protective device. Let's think of it like this. He's not going to do a lot of run supporting, but that's never been his game anyhow.
My question is, do you need him? I mean, going up against Vince Young with the receivers that the Titans have, can't you get it done without him this week?
Yeah, I mean, to me, if there was a game that you would want to have Rasheen miss, if he was going to have to miss one, this would probably be it.
Right.
Whether it be Kerry Collins or whether it be Vince Young, I don't think it matters. You know, this game is about stopping Chris Johnson.
I agree.
That's what it's about.
But I still get the sense he's going to play. They pay these guys to play. They want it on their resume as having played. Scott Starks will be ready to go, and Scott Starks is a very capable guy in pass coverage, and he's a tougher defender than tougher in run support than
Rasheen's. Well, you know what? Over the last couple games, Rasheen has been pretty good in run support now. You think of the big hit that he put on the Rams tight end going down the seam. Think of the hit that he put on in Seattle, TJ, who's your mama?
Yeah.
Where he turned around and he whacked him.
But everyone's remembering the two-hand.
The hit on the sideline against Tennessee here at home.
Yeah, but everyone is remembering the two-hand tag thing in Seattle. And that's going to dog him. Those push-out attempts are going to dog him. I personally think that other than for one game this year, he has just had a fantastic season. A fantastic season. I mean, that's my opinion.
Yeah, no, he has.
And I thought in the first quarter of that game.
But that's a hard game to ignore.
It's a hard. It's a problem.
I mean,
he just got whacked.
He had a bad game.
Now, I saw another great player, Rod Woodson, have one of those in Brett Favre's first ever start in 1992 against James Lofton. Oh, I mean, Woodson just had the game from hell. He just got beat up and down the field. So it happens. It happens to the very best of them.
355 NFL 1. So you play him.
I think
you don't worry about the long-term implications of the finger. How many fingers have you broken?
Now forget about the long. There's a screw in there. And that finger isn't going anywhere.
Okay.
But yeah, but you know what though? Surgery, okay? Opening the finger up, risk of infection.
Yeah.
Call Ronnie Lott, ask him what he'd do.
Ronnie Lott would have cut the finger off.
He'd bite it off.
Ronnie Lott would have cut the finger off and played. But He did it for the title game.
Right.
But you know what? I had the good fortune of playing with Ronnie in New York. And what we're talking about, I forget the year. And it was when the 49ers had played a game and they were advancing to the NFC title game. He'd had a finger injury. The doctors told him, you're not going to be able to play next week. We've got to fix your finger. And Ronnie's answer was, look, I'm playing next week. Doctor said, you can't. We've got to fix it. Ronnie said, well, I'm going to play, so you need to fix it in a way in which I can play. And the doctor said, hey, look, I'm not suggesting this, but the only possible way that you can play is for us to amputate the end of your finger off. Ronnie's answer was, well, cut the damn thing off. And he,
my God.
And and literally, I mean, right up by the first knuckle from your fingernail, you know, the one down from your fingernail to going down towards your hand. That it's cut off right below that knuckle joint, because I think it was broke right in the joint. And Ronnie came to New York at some point when I was there. It was like 93 or 94, I forget which, at the end of his career. And I remember asking Ronnie, you know, was it worth it? And would you do it again? And I really expected to get the answer, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And Ronnie told me, he says, no, I would not do it all over again. It was not worth it.
No. It would certainly depend on what finger it is. What finger was it?
The little finger.
It was one of the middle fingers.
Oh, no, see, no.
It was either the ring or the index.
Well, I'm looking at it right here. There's a picture of it on the web.
You got to have those. You can't putt.
And unless it's a fake, it looks like it's his pinky finger on his left hand.
Is it?
Yeah.
Now, that's not the grossest thing I ever saw. The grossest thing I ever saw was Steve DeBerg having a railroad spike driven through the tip of his little finger into his hand, up to his elbow. Do you remember that one?
Yep. No.
Oh, my God. Was
he played with it.
Oh, it was just horrendous.
He had a pin.
Left hand, yep. A pin.
He had a pin that was coming out of the top of the cast.
And at least 4 inches of the pin was coming out of the end of his finger. The thing was all the way down. It was a rod. And it was all the way down through his finger, and then he had a cast over the whole thing.
But the tip of the pin was out.
Oh, way out.
So if he'd hit the ground at an odd angle. But he played.
Did he start?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It was a playoff game against the Dolphins.
Yep.
Wow.
He played.
He was pretty good, too.
I don't think I could have done
it. Did they win the game?
Yeah, they did.
He was really good. I every time they showed his hand, I got chills.
Let's take a break. More to come here on Jaguars This Week. Right after this on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio, WOKV.
Welcome back, Jaguars This Week. We've got about 7 minutes left in this first hour. We'll pause for news at the top and then gear it right back up for hour number two. Grab a couple of phone calls here. We've got John in Orange Park. Hello, John.
Hello, how you doing tonight?
Good.
Yeah, I remember that game you were talking about with Steve DeBerg, that playoff game. I was wincing every time he went to throw that ball, because the Dolphins, it's like the watchword I was told there, said years after that, was that Shula said, as best you can, hit his hand every time you can when he comes around with that ball.
Oh.
And every time they could, you'd see him holding it after each play because somebody would smack him every time.
If you want to play with it, absolutely.
I can remember like it was yesterday, and when they first showed the picture, I literally got sick to my stomach. I mean, because, Jeff, this pin, it looked like a woman's knitting needle, except jumbo size. Do you know what a knitting needle looks like?
Yeah.
I mean, it looks like a railroad spike.
I do a little crocheting in the off-season, so I know what you're talking about.
But it had a tip on it that looked like a thumbtack. You know, it had that wide tip. It was not small.
Knitting
was,
needles look like that. Yep. At the end, they have.
Well, it couldn't
flat
be sharp.
Head.
That would have been used as a weapon.
No. It had a blunt, flat nail like head on.
I would have sharpened it up.
Conrad Dolber, right across the table, ladies and gentlemen.
I every time he took a snap, I thought to myself, "What if the guy hits the nail?"
Yeah. You didn't just think of what it took to play.
He's driving.
What it took to play.
I mean, the courage is fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, but is there any of them greater than Youngblood?
Wasn't broken it? Leg.
Yeah, that's to me, that's tops.
Yeah.
To play a game with a broken leg?
Yep, that's pretty good. I'm following these congressional hearings about concussions.
Yeah, they were working on those today.
All right. This is a true story. I had some concussions in my youth. I can remember being out on my feet a lot, you know, more than a couple times. And it seemed like it was always when you hit your head on the ground going backwards, you
mm-hmm.
go, bang, all right. And the helmets back then just weren't as good. They were the Rydell suspension types, and they called it ringing your bell. Well, some years later, I went through like a 2-3 year bout of vertigo. I mean, every so many weeks I would get these horrible bouts of vertigo. I would literally, I found myself holding onto the bed, not to spin out of the bed and fly around the room. It was so bad. I mean, anytime I would lie down or stand up, I would get this change and I would get these terrible bouts of vertigo. And then some other things, too. Well, I found out recently that all of this is...
Relative to that?
Yeah. Yep. It all goes right back to that. These are the things that happen to you later in life as your body continues to recover from these concussions. When you bruise your brain over and over and over, a vertigo is one of the repercussions of it later on. You know, and they're talking about that all now in these congressional hearings. You know, these poor guys, and they were playing with these old crappy helmets.
You had no shot.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they were experiencing these things and the dementia and everything else. I mean, look at John Mackey. Look at John Mackey. There's another guy right now I read about, a guy named Paul Martha, is going through this. Former player who was the guy who negotiated the labor peace in 1982. The players went on strike in 82. He's the guy that ended the strike. He was a rising star. He was named president of the San Francisco 49ers and or had some kind of a high post with the 49ers in the DeBartolo regime.
Right.
And he was one of the rising stars in professional football management. And then all of a sudden the dementia hit him and all of these head problems that were the result of recurring concussions. And then down went two marriages. And now he's before his time. He's in an old folks home. He's in a nursing home,
right?
Like John Mackey.
You know another guy's Ted Hendricks.
Yeah, I heard that about him.
Ted used to come down here and take part in a golf tournament that I was involved with for years and years, and got to be good friends with him. And it got to the point where you couldn't hold on a coherent conversation with a stork. I mean, he would come down and you just couldn't see where he was going.
Yeah, the other one is in most recent times is Ted Johnson, the linebacker
for
the Patriots. New England Patriots. And
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's having a real hard time, and I have obviously my old agent is based out of Boston, and he sees Ted quite a bit, and he just said that, you know, Ted's in bad shape. You know, one day he's fine, and then the next day he just can't function.
He's not 40 years old.
And he's younger than me.
Yeah,
he's younger than me, and I'm, you know, 42. So, I mean, he's a relatively young, I mean, too young to have that happen.
Well, Merrill Hodge, I know, is scared of it. He's really afraid of it.
Merrill is scared of it. Al Toon had to retire from it, my teammate at the New York Jets.
I saw the most horrible thing with Al Toon, and it had to have been a game. I'll tell you when it was. It was your rookie year in 1989. Do you remember Greg Lloyd counting him out?
Mm-hmm.
He nailed him. And Toon is on the ground, out, and Lloyd gets down on two knees and hit the turf three times, counting him out. Oh, my God.
Greg Lloyd was a jerk.
He was an animal.
Yeah. Good football.
Do you remember that game?
I remember it very well.
It was at Giant Stadium.
Yeah.
Counted him out.
Al Toon.
No penalty. No penalty.
Al Toon had some head issues prior to that hit, and that wasn't the hit that kind of ended it for Al. There was one later on, and I remember I kind of felt guilty about it because I remember saying to Al, that was probably 90, 91, whenever it was, and I told Al, I said, you know, I said, I remember back before I got here and I was watching you, how exciting you were after you caught the ball. You know, because Al Toon.
Big receiver.
He was a big receiver that could run after the catch. Mm-hmm. And I remember saying that to him one week because Al kind of got to the point, and it was after that Greg Lloyd hit where it was catch and look for a place to get down safely.
Yes.
And he wasn't the same player.
And then he got a reputation for being soft.
Yeah, I don't want to say I called him out, but it was in a nice way. I just said, you know, Al, I remember back when you were unbelievable once you got the ball in your hands. You know, when I was, you know, watching you back in the day, you were unbelievable. Well, we go to play somebody, and I can't remember when it was because I think it was Al's last game, and it was that week that I kind of said that to him. And what I was trying to do is stir the pot on him, trying to get Al to play the way the Al Toon used to play. And he goes out in this game, and he tries to be the Al Toon of old on this one play, and he got whacked. That was it.
Thank you, Jeff.
The end of Al Toon's career. And honestly, I did. I kind of felt a little bit responsible because I remember trying to kind of tweak him a little bit and get Al to play at a higher level.
Yeah, you know, you may not know this. His son is playing for Wisconsin.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Is it Al Toon Jr.?
I believe it is.
Looks just like him.
Al set his roots up. He went to University of Wisconsin and was planning on going back there, I know, after his playing days at the Jets.
Time for news here at the top of the hour, folks. We've got another hour of this fine program to follow on News Talk Radio WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL1 or 1-800-355-NFL1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
We're back. Hour number two now, Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV. We just kept going on the whole hour. We really didn't get to the phone too often. So in this hour, we'll do
open them up.
355-NFL, 1-800-355-NFL1. In case you're just joining us, Jeff Fisher in his afternoon news conference today, and it started to make its way around the Pro Football Talks and the ESPNs of the world, has said that tomorrow after practice he will make his announcement as to who the quarterback is going to be. Obviously, if you follow this, Bud Adams said, hey, I want Vince Young. Jeff Fisher's been noncommittal for competitive reasons. Tomorrow, he'll make it official.
I want to bounce something off you guys.
Okay.
On my Monday show, Jaguars Monday show, I had on as a guest, Paul Kuharsky, who is the AFC South blogger for ESPN.com. He lives in Nashville, and he has covered the Titans since their days in Houston when they were the Oilers. Paul made a very good point when he said that he attributed the Titans, a large part of the Titans' success at the box office, to their ability to convert college football fans to pro football fans, to get them to split their loyalties between Saturday and Sunday, because, of course, there were no just pro football fans in Tennessee because there had never been a team. So they knew they had to do that. You know, and I started thinking about what Paul said, and I started to do some homework on it. I looked at the Titans franchise, and it's amazing the number of University of Tennessee and Vanderbilt players they haven't drafted. It's amazing the ties to Tennessee that they don't have. For instance, they could have in 1998 cleared the deck and gone after Steve Spurrier, who's from Johnson City, Tennessee, I believe.
He is.
All right. I mean, he would have been an instant sell in Tennessee, right? They could have thrown Redskin money at him. They could have traded away their first round picks for who knows how many drafts to get the pick to draft Peyton Manning.
In 98.
Could have drafted Jay Cutler from Vanderbilt. Their most prominent draft pick of a Tennessee player is Albert Haynesworth, who was really kind of a turd. You know, it was not the kind of player that you would consider lovable or to whom the fan base would warm.
No, but he was a great player. Great football player.
But, yes, but you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Not a lovable kind of a loot. It's interesting. They have somehow. And the name Tennessee didn't hurt, you know, instead of Nashville.
Right.
They have somehow captured the spirit of the football fan.
How? I mean, what examples did Paul have? They
did some positive things. For instance, the Tennessee name.
Right.
This Titans, which has some kind of link to mythology and to the state of Tennessee. I don't know that part of it. But the logo involves state colors and some and the state flag. Yeah. So, I mean, they did some smart things there, but they were somehow able to go out and capture the fancy of the college football fan in probably, I can't imagine, a worse place.
With country music there and so many people from...
I think how they did it. They made themselves the team of country music.
And that's huge.
And that's huge.
Oh, you see Faith Hill. We've seen a lot of people sing the national anthem there. They have embraced it.
And Nashville's also a destination.
Yes, and they have something else. They have a very, very strong and vibrant downtown area.
That's true.
And, you know, one of the things I'm noticing now about the teams that really draw is that they're teams that have great downtowns, you know, really vibrant downtown areas.
Indianapolis
does. Philadelphia, well, of course, Philadelphia is a big market. But Baltimore, there's one with a great
with
downtown.
With the Inner Harbor there, yeah.
And I'm looking at this because, well, I think Paul caught my fancy with what he said, and I'm trying to apply it here. And you know, it's something we haven't done here. We haven't.
There's been a lot of talk.
Yeah, we haven't captured the college football fans' fancy.
You know, and they've tried, obviously.
They've tried.
They've drafted Florida players.
And Tennessee hasn't. The Titans have not. Now you give me, I mean, who is it? What running back? What wide receiver? What player other than Albert Haynesworth?
Okay, well, looking at the roster right now, they have Mark Jones, a backup wide receiver from Tennessee. They have David Stewart's Mississippi State. That's not close.
You know, if I'm missing one in their history, folks, call it in. Because, Peyton Manning would have been the obvious in 1998, which was the year they moved from Memphis to Nashville.
Right.
Peyton Manning would have been the perfect trade everything to draft.
Tony Brown is from Memphis, but it's not like he was a high-profile guy because he ended up going through the World League.
Yeah, and he bounced around a couple of times, and Memphis doesn't really capture the spirit of Tennessee.
No coach. Coaches from California.
Javon Hay, but he was a free agent acquisition this past offseason from the Bucks. Other than that, that's it.
Well, I'm even going back in their history. I mean, here's a team whose coach is from California, its owner's from Texas. One quarterback is from Pennsylvania, the other quarterback is from Texas. I mean, yet they've been successful.
It'll be interesting to see what kind of
think geography, though.
Attendance that we're going to see there this
they're
week.
They're sold out. Forget about
No, I know that.
But think about the geography.
Yeah, they're going to have lots of no-shows. 0-6 on a 45-0 halftime blowout is a great formula for not going
think
to
about
the
geography, though, that they have. And I'm not talking east and west, because that's a long state, obviously, to get over to Missouri.
Where's the closest other pro sports
Atlanta's
team?
Well, Atlanta's 3 hours away, and they do have a hockey team there in their
no,
town.
No, that's longer than 3 hours, isn't it?
No, Atlanta's about 3 hours away from Nashville. It's not a far drive at all. I mean, you can Google it and get the mileage, but it's not all that far of a drive. The point is that they reach up into Kentucky and down into Alabama. There's not a lot of other things there that they compete against for the pro sports dollar or for the
Well, they got the Predators,
well, that's
the hockey team.
That's it. And, you know, they almost moved last year. I mean, they've had some significant problems, but the Titans have not. Here's what they've done, and this is in my opinion. They went out. They created a Titans caravan, man, and they take players and they get out all across the state of Tennessee in the offseason. They have worked it. Of course, they weren't competing with the Dolphins and the Buccaneers and the Magic. And
I'll be right back. I'm going to my office to get something, and I'll be right back.
Okay. I'm sorry. I guess it's 4 hours. How many miles is it, Joe?
49. Yeah, it's by far more, because I made that drive for Orioles. Yeah, it's like three and a half hours.
But it's not a long drive
right
there. And you can get into – you can get down into – there's a lot of people that live in Nashville – and work in northern Alabama, in Huntsville, where NASA has a facility there. And people can get up into Kentucky on a regular basis.
Yeah, I was looking in the Titans press release, you know, how just much like, you know, Jaguars broadcasts are in, you know, other areas besides just Jacksonville.
Right.
And I was looking at the Tennessee Titans radio affiliates, and they got a pretty broad reach now.
They've got geography on their side. You know, and it's like you go look at the Kansas City Chiefs, and the Chiefs have a ton of radio stations, Nebraska, Iowa, Kansas, Oklahoma, Missouri, where there's a lot of small towns, and there's not a lot of things to compete with there. But you got to give the credit to the Titans now. This caravan thing that they do, I mean, it's a huge part. Mike Keith, their play-by-play guy, you know, he is a huge component of that. That's what he does in the offseason, gathers players and goes out and hits every small little town and every medium-sized city in the vicinity, and they really have made a name for themselves in an area where there is a void for pro sports. So the Titans have done well. We'll see what their situation is on Sunday. Let's take a break.
Yeah, and we'll talk to Jay when we come back.
All right. Callers are next here on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. On News Talk Radio, WOKV.
Welcome back. Hour number two rolling along here, Jaguars This Week on News Talk Radio, WOKV. We're here for 2 hours every Wednesday night, Jaguars and Titans Sunday. Don't forget, 4:05 Eastern time for the kickoff. And you gain an hour. It's fall back in the early hours of Sunday morning. So mark it down. We'll kick things off here on News Talk Radio WOKV at 1 o'clock Eastern time with the tailgate show. Pre-game show comes along at 3 o'clock, kickoff at 4:05, followed by the Winn-Dixie post-game show and the scoreboard show. Okay.
You ready for this?
Yeah.
In the Titans' entire history, in Nashville.
So 98, or you got 97 as well?
No, 97 was Memphis.
Yeah, but they were in Nashville. They practiced in Nashville, and then they drove the games.
Okay, I'll give you Nashville, too. Or 97, too. How many Tennessee players have they drafted in all those years?
Three.
You got it, three. Albert Haynesworth, and then down the road, down the line, Jesse Mahalona was, I think, a fifth-round pick, and Joey Ken, a wide receiver, was a second-round pick in 97. 97, okay, three. You know how many Vanderbilt players?
None.
Zip. I mean, it's the next time you think the Jaguars haven't drafted enough Florida players. Think about that. I mean, Tennessee's turned out a lot of football players in that period of time, and these guys have drafted three, and only one of those has done anything, Haynesworth. The other guys were just guys. The Jaguars have Derek Harvey, Fred Taylor, Mike Peterson, not a draft pick, but a guy they signed.
Mike Pearson. Remember the second-round pick?
Mike Pearson, Chris Doering, Reggie Nelson.
Willie Jackson.
Bobby McCray.
Willie Jackson.
Bobby McCray. Yeah, Willie Jackson was a guy signed as a free agent.
They had the free agent offensive lineman the last 2 years here, the kid who was on and off the practice squad. Can't remember the center.
Oh, Miller.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Florida State guys, Larry Smith.
Greg Jones,
yep.
Todd Fordham.
This team has done a lot of, compared to what the Titans have done with Tennessee and Vanderbilt players, this team has been more than active, more than aggressive.
So that, clearly that's not the key.
That's not the
key. The key is not grabbing players from the universities.
As I've said, coaches and players don't sell tickets.
355-NFL-1. 355-6351. Let's go out to Mayport and bring Jay onto the program. Hello, Jay.
Hey, guys, I appreciate you taking my phone call this evening.
Happy to do it.
I have one question, and I got a comment for Jeff. My 13-year-old daughter broke my heart today, buddy.
Uh-oh.
And I know you're a big fisherman like the rest of us Mayport boys. She's 13 years old, had the day off from school because she had a doctor appointment at 2 o'clock. I was like, that gives enough time to go fishing. Okay, Daddy, okay. So at 4, 5 o'clock this morning, I woke her up and said, hey, let's go. Let's get the boat. Let's go. She went, Daddy, it takes me an hour and a half to get ready for anything. And I'm 13 years old, and I just can't be seen fishing with my daddy no more. I went, I said, get out of the boat. I went to my buddy's house to pick them up. That's bad. Broke my heart. Anyway,
they all
what do
grow
you
up.
Do? Yeah, they will. Anyway, hey, I got hooked on fishing and not on drugs. I'm telling you what, baby. Thank you for that big message, Jeff, for all those years. Anyways, my question is, we're playing Tennessee this weekend. I hope we just stomp their butts. But why in Vegas, why are we 3 to 4 point underdogs? And like I said, appreciate you taking my call, and I'll take the answer off there, buddy.
Thank you, Jay.
That's a good question.
That's a real good question.
All right, the answer is because you had to go to overtime to beat the St. Louis Rams. Now, let's not forget that the Jaguars are off a 41-0 steel clubbing. They've had to go into overtime to beat the Rams. I mean, you know, it's not as though at 3-3 the Jaguars are being anointed for anything.
No, you're right, and you always get a home field is worth three points,
right?
And so
that's it. It's a 3-point game.
Is that what the spread is now? Three points. So they're saying it's even, and you know, I guarantee a lot of the odds makers say, hey, look. The Tennessee Titans are due, right?
Yeah,
sure. Two
exactly.
weeks
you know,
to get ready, absolutely.
Two
Jeff
weeks
Fisher's
to get
reputation.
Ready, absolutely. So I think that probably has a lot to do with it, too. And that also the line a lot of times, I guess from what I understand, because I'm not a gambling man, I don't know all the rules or how that's done, but from what I have been told, the line also is dependent upon where the money's being bet.
Well, that's everything. It's what the line tells you is where the money is as far as this team or that team. If the money is heavy on one team, then they got to give points. You know, they want to balance that money. They, in a perfect world.
So people are saying, hey, the money's going to Tennessee, right?
Right.
That's what that's saying.
So they're trying to draw people to bet for the Jaguars so that they don't lose
money. You know, we're not supposed to talk about this kind of stuff, but betting on the Jaguars is a pretty good deal because they get more.
Are you encouraging people
to I would
knock
never
it off,
do that,
Vic.
Commissioner Goodell.
Knock it
never.
Off.
But they get more points because it's a small market, because the money, there's not as much money on Jaguars, on the Jaguars, as there are on other teams.
I know nothing about that,
Roger. That's the way it works. That's the way it works.
So you're saying that the market size drives the line?
Oh, the betting ratio.
Okay.
Where is the money? Are people putting more money on Tennessee or more money on Jacksonville? If it's more on Tennessee, then they will adjust the line to drag in more money from the Jaguars side because they want a pretty even split there. They want to get it right, but they don't want to be devastated if they get it wrong.
All right,
because they're dealing in volume.
I don't understand all that. I mean, I kind of get the general idea, but I. Like I said, I'm not a gambling guy.
355-NFL-1. 355-6351.
Now, Joe Fortunato, on the other hand, has got big money on this series.
Well, he comes from Philadelphia. He's got mob connections. So, clearly, you
I'm
can
sorry,
tell
there,
from
there's,
his
there's
family's
no such thing
involved
as the mob.
Are you getting excited? I mean, you want me to flip the channel here in the next 5 minutes or so, right?
Nah, it's okay.
You're going to be glued to the television.
Just be ready,
have a job
folks.
To do.
We're probably going to get off the air at about 5 minutes till tonight. Joe's got lots of commercials built into this top of the hour break coming.
Have you been
up.
Online?
I'm going to get Jeff Hess to give us about 15 minutes of news at the top of the hour.
How many buttons does that shirt have? I've never seen so many buttons in my life for a golf shirt.
Five
buttons on a golf shirt.
I'm styling.
Joe, that would be 6 buttons. Yeah, recount.
And then the top one.
Oh, there's 2 up here.
Yeah. That's 6, yes. That's 6.
6 buttons.
Could you sport
shirt.
A Philly shirt for every day of the series? Have you got that many?
Yeah, he's got plenty.
Golf shirts?
Oh, yeah.
Golf All shirt. Golf shirts, or are we talking about T-shirts, too?
T-shirts, we can go the whole month.
How old were you when they died like a dog in 65?
You know, 64.
64.
I look at him correct you.
How old were you?
I really wasn't into it then.
I was
born in 58, so
yeah.
I
can remember like it was 6. Yesterday. I was 13 years old. And
Joe
I was
too
really
busy playing with G.I. Joes.
Oh, there man. Jeff, it was heartbreaking what happened in the last week. It was 6 up going into the last week?
6.5 games.
6.5?
They had 12 left to play.
Dominated all year long. Johnny Callison and Richie Allen. Richie Allen was so good back then. Yeah. And they just collapsed. Jim Bunning. Just collapsed.
He was rookie of the year. Richie Allen was.
Yeah.
Did you stop?
Now
I have no idea what you guys are talking
now,
about.
Now they are the dominant team in the National League. By far.
Do you buy any memorabilia? Any World Series championship memorabilia from their last fall? Like you have a shirt or
pennants? Yeah, yeah. Right. I did. I spent big bucks on a shirt. The first year, the first game this year. They came out with shirts they only wore one day. They were outlined in gold. All the red was outlined in gold.
And they wore that just
for the one day. Then they auctioned them off. I couldn't touch that. That was ridiculous. But I ended up buying one of those.
And what's big bucks?
$250.
Whoa.
That's very large bucks.
For a shirt?
Oh. Got to be mob money in that, I'll tell you.
Can you wear it for us next Wednesday?
Depends on how they're doing.
All right. So here we are, killing time, talking about the Phillies.
Have you guys been following what's coming up here for the Richard Collier trial? Have you guys been following
I've been
that?
Following it, yes.
And did that start today? It was
it
today?
Yesterday.
Yesterday was the official start, and then today it also is ongoing.
Rich looks good. Understanding, of course, that he's going through terrible rigors, but he looked good.
He's looked great since, I guess it was
since he was here for the
earlier
Colts
this
game.
Year for that little kind of. Well,
he was here
game.
For the Cardinals game, the alumni
Cardinals game. Yeah,
okay.
The alumni game.
I thought he looked good at the Colts, the coin toss for the Colts game last year. You know, I mean, being that he was only a few months removed from what happened, from the incident, I thought he looked great. But now, I mean, he's kept the weight off.
Mm-hmm. You would have to say
looks good.
That his attitude,
yeah,
his approach, proves what you can do if you focus on your attitude. Because he had every reason to not be happy. And yet he finds every day a reason to be happy. He's a great example to people of how life circumstances kick you and you can get right back up.
Well, his testimony now in these past couple of days, I'm actually talking about yesterday's testimony. His testimony is that of a reckless young man, a guy who liked to play hard.
Mm-hmm.
Way too much life on the edge. Way too much fighting, and it caught up to him because it put him in an element with some really, really bad people.
Well,
that were going to do more than punch. That were going to do more than
certainly
punch.
Nobody deserved what he got.
No.
And I hope that this is solved, and a justice is served here.
Now, what's absolutely? I mean, that if it's not, we're all going to be greatly disappointed in the system. What's bothering me right now is yesterday he was treated by the defense as the villain, not the victim. I mean, he was painted in a very, very negative light, and that bothers me. Yeah, he lived on the edge. But
you know what,
he
Vic?
Was the victim of hellacious violence.
Well, when I was 21, 22, 23.
Yeah, I know.
Do you remember when you were that age?
Yeah.
We were all at that age. We were kind of all, you know, young, crazy, you know.
I could tell stories.
So you got real big stories from what I understand. But, I mean, think about those days. We all made decisions that weren't great, you know. So, and Rich, I don't think, is any different, but certainly didn't deserve anything that he received.
No, absolutely not.
All right, time for news here at the bottom of the hour. 30 more minutes of the show to come on News Talk Radio WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL1 or 1-800-355-NFL1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
Welcome back. Jaguars This Week rolls on towards 8 o'clock in the conclusion of this program. Don't forget Jaguars Titans from Nashville, LP Field, 4:05 kickoff Sunday afternoon. That means we start with the tailgate show at 1 o'clock. Pre-game at 3, whistle-to-whistle coverage of the Jaguars and Titans at 4:05, and then the Winn-Dixie post-game show and the scoreboard show, all right here on News Talk Radio WOKV. Grab a caller from Orlando and welcome Casey to the show. Hello, Casey.
Hey, how you guys doing tonight?
Good.
Good. Hey, so I've got a question. All of this talk about Bud Adams has made me wonder. I know a lot of owners in the league try to get involved in a lot of roster decisions and kind of get antsy when they don't see improvement right away. So I wonder what your take is on Wayne Weaver and how patient he is as an owner for the Jaguars, because one of my biggest fears is that the general manager and the head coach aren't given the time necessary to complete the rebuilding of this roster, and instead, you know, we kind of get forced into making some nervous moves, for example. So what are your thoughts on that?
I've never heard Wayne Weaver second-guess a coach or a personnel director.
No, I think he's as if you were a coach or if you were a general manager, this is the type of owner that you would want to work for.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to, you know, sit in on a day-to-day, you know, type of deal and provide input on what should be done personnel-wise, what should be done team-wise. He entrusts his people to do the job. And I think if it gets to the point where the owner is completely removed, because I played for one in New York, Leon Hess,
he was
an owner that was not involved at all, had no understanding of what was going on with the organization, the football team at all. And to me, having an owner like that is counterproductive.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Wayne is aware of what's going on, but the term, I guess, meddlesome. I think Dan Snyder, meddlesome.
Yeah, that's
right.
That fits. By that standard, Bud Adams is not meddlesome.
No,
he's not.
He's rarely done this.
Nope.
No, Bud Adams has been one of those guys that is kind of has. He's a football guy. He's been around football for a long time, but he's always been one of those guys that has kind of been kind of away
but
from
the
picture.
But he's been meddlesome as far as Vince Young is concerned
because
he's got
him.
That Texas, that fascination with Texas, University of Texas football, and he's got an obsession with this guy.
He's not an alum, by the way, of Texas. He just went to
No,
fan.
But he's a big Texas supporter.
Well, because he was there his whole career. He's actually from Bartlesville, Oklahoma. He went to the University of Kansas and became an oil man and ended up in Houston. The real connection with Vince Young is the fact that Vince Young is from Houston.
Oh, is that what it
is?
Yeah,
Vince is a Houston guy.
I knew that, but I didn't know that. I thought it was because he played at Texas.
No, it was Houston that did it for him. He wanted the Houston star to take back to Houston every year and beat their new team. That was his deal.
I just know that, you know, to answer your question, Casey, Wayne Weaver, and I'm not saying this because this is Jaguars this week, Tom Coughlin would tell you the same thing. I mean, this isn't an environment to succeed with an owner like Jacksonville has here in Wayne Weaver.
Yep. And we'll leave it at that. 355-NFL-1. How about some other environments around the National Football League?
Boy, what's going on in Washington right now is a mess. Yeah. And we knew it was going to be that way. I mean, me and Joe listened to an interview earlier today with the COO of the Washington Redskins being interviewed by some guys that
who
conduct.
Who is that, Serato?
No, I forget his name. Basically, he would be the Bill Prescott.
Okay.
What Bill Prescott is to the Jaguars for the Redskins. And obviously the Redskins are facing a situation now with, remember in the offseason you had the team supposedly suing season ticket holders.
Yep.
You have the Redskins that are banning any type of signage or banners being brought into the stadium. There were reports that they were making Redskins fans turn T-shirts or shirts that had messages on them like, you know, Serato sucks or, you know, Snyder, you don't know what you're doing, those type of things. They were trying to make them turn them inside out. So there was a lot of questions in the last week. And then also with the promotion of Sherman Lewis to offensive coordinator, I mean, folks, if you want a recipe for disaster, get you an owner like Dan Snyder.
Yeah.
He's a wreck.
Oh, they got another bad. The other bad situation in the league right now is Cleveland. It's there is buyer's remorse already from what I'm reading on Eric Mangini. They already, you know, believe that they've made the wrong selection. And
saw that when they hired him.
The Cleveland situation is horrible. They're pulling a little number on Brady Quinn, they believe, that is attached to incentives in his contract, you know, where they're benching him because they don't want him to achieve certain escalators.
Is Mangini an all-powerful coach, personnel,
yes.
And coach?
Yes.
How
no,
in
well,
the
George,
world?
George Kikinis runs personnel,
yeah,
but I think Mangini has final say.
Mangini went in there and fired 50 employees because he wanted to bring his own guys in.
They're still paying Phil Savage an incredible sum of money yearly.
How in the world could you...
Seven figures.
How in the world does Eric Mangini get that power
That's what I never
in
understood.
Cleveland?
Why is anyone... Why
he
would
never
anyone
did it
hire...
The Jets.
Yeah, it's... Yeah.
He never had the success with the Jets that would merit that.
No.
Plus, you
Plus
saw
the
whole...
Belichick tree. I mean, you know, Charlie Weiss, is he successful? I don't think so. Romeo Crennel clearly wasn't. Mangini certainly is not. Now, Josh McDaniels would be, of course, he's only in year one, but as it stands right now, he's the most successful guy, though it's only six games, of all the apples off the Belichick tree.
Yeah, none of the other guys ever had a year like Josh McDaniels is having right now.
No.
You know, at any one point. But I don't get the Mangini thing. I mean, really, I don't get that.
Pioli's struggling in Kansas City as the GM.
Of course, he had a total gut job there.
Yep.
Total rebuild, and now he's
but
got
is Matt Castle worth what he paid? Is Matt
they
Castle
pay him $60 million?
Well, it's not just what they paid him; it's the picks
up.
they gave up a first and a second.
Yeah,
I mean, is he truly? He was just a guy until last year. Now, on the strength of not making the playoffs last year, on the strength of an 11-5 season where he really kind of was,
but he was throwing
a caretaker quarterback.
Throw to Wes Welker and Randy Moss.
Right. I mean, is he really a franchise quarterback? Because they're paying him according to that.
Absolutely they are. All right, we're due for a break. Let's take it now. 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. We'll come back and take your calls here on Jaguars This Week on News Talk Radio, WOKB.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio, WOKV.
10 minutes to go here in Jaguars This Week. Let's go right to the phone lines. We've got Larry in Mandarin to start us off. Hello, Larry.
Hey, Brian. How are you doing?
Good. Welcome to the show.
Good. My question is mostly for Jeff, but all three of you guys can take a shot at it. I know a lot's been made about Eugene Monroe's struggles this year, and I don't see it as that bad. And I know a lot of it came from that first game against Dwight Freeney. And my question for Jeff is, or all of you, had Tony Boselli been a rookie this year, would he have done much better than Eugene Monroe did against someone like Dwight Freeney, who's a seasoned veteran and knows all the tricks?
Yes, Tony would have done better just because in Tony's first game he was matched up against Sean Jones of the Green Bay Packers, and Tony just hammered Sean Jones.
Remember, Tony was coming in after missing three games.
Yeah, and but you know. Let me ask you this, Larry. Where are you hearing that Eugene Monroe has done so poorly at?
Well, a lot of people are calling in to different shows.
Okay, I just want to make sure. I just want to make sure that you weren't getting that impression from us.
No. And what my eyes see is a guy who maybe gets a little bit off balance every once in a while, but basically stands his ground and does a pretty decent job when he's in there.
He's a good football player. But there's no question that he has a lot of room for improvement. And in the area that I see that he needs the most improving is his finishing. He's got the footwork. He's got the power. He's an athlete. But the one thing that I want to see him do better is finish his blocks in the running game and finish his blocks in the passing game. If Eugene Monroe will do that, he will be a very good football player for a long time. I think in college, the big adjustment is that sometimes in college, you're such a superior athlete to the guy in college that your athletic ability wins. At the pro level, athletic ability is very even. And the guys that finish or the guys that work on the details are the ones that separate themselves from the rest of the pack and become good players. And I think Eugene is starting to understand that. And Eben Britton, I think, is learning the finer points of some of the techniques, although he finishes. So Evan's not the athlete that Eugene is, although he's a fine athlete. He's not the athlete that Eugene is, but he understands how to finish, and it's in his temperament. Eugene needs to get a little bit of that.
Appreciate the phone call, 355-NFL-1. If you'd like to weigh in here over the last 7 or 8 minutes of the show, back to Kansas City for a minute. We were talking about Scott Pioli and his rebuild job out there. Boy, does he have a mess to deal with Larry Johnson.
Oh,
remember that. He didn't do this. This was the previous regime, but they gave Larry Johnson a guaranteed contract worth about $19 million.
Why would you give a guy who has a stormy past that kind of ability to take you hostage, which is what he's done? I mean, once he got the deal, he was in the driver's seat, and the team was in the back seat.
You got to get rid of him.
You have to get rid of him.
You have to. I mean, he's already taken shots at the head coach.
Oh, horrible shot.
And I guess he did that with this Twittering, blogging, whatever you want to call it, you know. And folks, this is something new to the National Football League. And this is going to open up a whole new can of worms and a whole new way for players to get into trouble. And Larry Johnson got into trouble. One of his comments about gays was on his Twitter, website, whatever it is, and then he took shots at Todd Haley, the head coach of the Kansas City Chiefs, on his website, Twitter account, or whatever.
Mm-hmm. There are college football programs who have people on staff who do nothing but monitor their players' Twitters and
Facebook sites.
Facebooks and
well,
websites.
They have to, because there are situations where you could have NCAA rules violations, right?
Yeah, you know, which brings me to something else, and I we're kind of scrambling for subject matter because it's, you know, it's a bye week. We don't have a game from last Sunday to grab onto. But here's something I had thought about Sunday. I'm sitting watching all these games on TV, which I don't normally do. I watch one game, you know, and then I watch one on Monday night, and that's my thing.
But not counting all the college football you watch.
I watch college football to an excess, and I see too few pro games. But there I am Sunday watching all these games. I'm watching Miami, New Orleans. I'm watching Minnesota, Pittsburgh. I watched several games. And I'm just seeing dumb thing after dumb thing after dumb thing.
On part of who?
Well, I see a Miami receiver with 2 minutes and 17 seconds left on the clock, outside the two-minute warning, trailing by 6 points, decide that it would be a good thing to throw the ball out of bounds because that would stop the clock. I mean, did he not think that this is a bad thing?
I didn't know if he actually tried to do that or not.
Oh, he clearly did. He clearly did. And the clock would have stopped the two-minute warning, and at the two-minute warning anyhow, they had plenty of time. Did he not know that there's a penalty on that that includes loss of down? And should he not have known that? I see dumb play. And when you get into the look at me celebration category, the goofs become sickening. Right beginning with the kid from Florida the night before who decided that he had to flaunt his touchdown, which allowed the ball to get stripped before he went into the end zone. And why replay didn't overturn that, I don't know. I guess the SEC officials are on the take. I mean, because that was just so blatant.
Yep.
I mean, everyone. That's another. That's three in a row. There was the one in LSU where the kid tried to pull the shirt off the defender, and he caught the winning touchdown. And then there was the Arkansas debacle, which resulted in the officials being suspended. And then there was this thing with the instrument with the replay review I don't get. But, I mean, you see it over and over and over. Just dumb thing after dumb thing after dumb thing. Jeff, this question is for you.
Okay.
Do players gain esteem in the locker room for doing dumb things? Does that make them, do the other players laugh then? Do they have a, is there something about that that makes them grow in stature?
No.
Then why are they doing it?
I don't
know.
Because
it's so dumb, it defies description.
If we're in the look at me era, right?
Look at me, read me, with the Twitter thing.
Look at me, look at me, look at me, and that applies to all different areas.
You call your coach a golf coach? I mean, that's what he called Todd Haley. He said he's never done anything. What did our coach do? He played golf. I mean, just that it's so disrespectful to say that of.
Well, and you know what was embarrassing? You're talking about the statements that Larry Johnson did. And what was embarrassing is that Larry's agent, who's Rick Schaefer, who I know Rick, Rick actually recruited me way back in the day, tried to play it off in that Larry was trying to prop up his dad and not to knock down Todd Haley, which is a total joke. And then Larry's dad, who, as you said, is assistant coach,
defensive
under
line
Joe
coach.
Paterno,
yeah.
At Penn State
for years and years,
came out and made the statement and says, I don't know why he's doing this. He was not taught this growing up in our house. That's a pretty strong statement from dad to son.
Absolutely it is. In the public eye?
Mm-hmm.
Whew.
And I'm glad he did it.
Give me, what other games did I see this weekend? Because I
wasn't with you, so I don't know.
Well,
but
the Jacksonville, the games we saw here in Jacksonville. Pittsburgh and Minnesota at 1 o'clock. What was the New England and Tampa Bay?
I was watching the Red Zone.
Okay.
On Comcast. And you haven't seen that yet.
No.
Have you seen it, Loggy?
Yes.
I think it's fantastic. And I thought it would be.
Well, and it's not just it's on Comcast here, but it's also when you get the NFL channel, whether you have some type of dish network satellite, or you have cable, it comes with the NFL channel.
And I didn't think I'd like it because I wanted to, you know, want to watch a game and how it evolves, but they take you to every game at key moments. So you watched probably some of the Colts and Rams?
No, I was not one.
No? Okay.
The
I didn't know what was on local
Bucks,
TV because I was watching
Bucks
that.
And Patriots. Can anyone explain to me why a team would hire as its coach a guy who said he learned his football from playing Madden? Can someone please explain that one to me? Raheem Morris.
I don't know
that's
why.
That's going well. That's going very well.
I can't understand why.
He's lost on the field, you can tell. He doesn't have a clue.
But John Gruden's doing a heck of a job on Monday Night Football.
He's great.
But I still don't understand why they got rid of him.
Yeah.
Good football coach.
You get rid of him and hire Raheem Morris?
Yeah. You see what you've got from that now.
Yep.
And that'll do it for our show, ladies and gentlemen. We'll talk to you on Sunday at 1 o'clock Eastern Time. Don't forget to set your clock back. Have a great night.
This has been Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, on your flagship station for Jaguars football, AM 690 and 106.5 FM. News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it. WOKV AM, Jacksonville.